trying to end it up against the wall, which would be fitting. 3 seconds to go. The Florida Panthers have won the Stanley Cup.
The first time ever the Florida Panthers have won the Stanley Cup in their franchise history. They won 2-1 in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals in Sunrise, Florida on Monday night. So Florida again winning the Stanley Cup, and Edmonton, all that work to fight back from down 3-0 to tie it up at 3, and they came just short. It was definitely an interesting game, and one in which Florida had to hold on in the final period in a scoreless period to win a 2-1 game and get the victory to claim their first Stanley Cup. We'll have more on that coming up here in the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. It's brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. So be listening for that. Kind of a rare occurrence where the Conn Smythe Trophy went to an interesting person. We'll talk about that here coming up as well. Another champion crowned last night in baseball with a Kansas connection. Heavily weighing on that for Tennessee and Texas A&M in the College World Series Championship Finals on Monday night, Game 3, the deciding game as well. So I'll have more on that also. And the Kansas City Royals opening out a three-game series with the Miami Marlins there in Kansas City and breaking a long scoring drought finally, and having a good night there at Kauffman Stadium. So that's all coming up here on the Sports Ticket. We have with us again this morning our intern, Matthew. I'm not going to call you 17 or 35 different names like Wade did the other day, so we'll keep
darn
it.
Darn sucks. Shucks.
Matthew with us here this morning. I'll bounce some stuff off of him here during the show as well. The first thing I'm going to bounce off of you, though, I don't know if you heard what our Facebook question of the day was today. It is, what's a food that you don't like and it's like regular or raw form that you like if it's prepared in a different way? So my example was onions. Like, I don't like raw onions, but I love like grilled onions on a patty melt from Whataburger, or, you know, even on a patty melt from anywhere. I like grilled onions, and I like onion rings, too. So, you have anything, like, we've had different answers, like, don't like tomatoes, but I like ketchup and tomato sauce and tomato soup and things like that. And anything you can think of that you like that don't like normally, but if it's prepared in a certain way, you do?
Tomatoes would be a good one.
Yep. That was my probably second answer. I said that earlier today. I'm like, I don't like tomatoes at all, and I'm pretty sure it's just like the juice when you bite into a tomato and the texture of it. Like, not for me. My brother's the same way, right? We both of us in the Donis family on the male side anyway. I don't know if my sisters like tomatoes or not now that I'm talking about it, but I know me and my brother are not fans of tomatoes. But I say, you know, I do go for like if I get a pizza and they have like a sweet tomato based sauce, I'll pick that instead of like a regular marinara or regular pizza sauce. Yeah. And so I, for some reason, I like that a little bit better. So
I don't know.
Cucumbers and pickles. Do you like cucumbers?
I like pickles, not really cucumbers.
Exactly. So that's another one that we had on an answer. You know, I don't like raw carrots, but if you put carrots into a roast beef and they're cooked, love carrots. It's so weird about how some of that works. It's just based on texture and things like that.
You don't like raw carrots?
No.
That's one of the few vegetables I like raw.
Yeah.
Dip them in ranch, that's amazing.
The thing. If they have ranch on them, I can put them down. Oh. But I'm not a fan of pretty much any raw vegetable like that, like celery, carrots, anything of that nature. I'm not. Cucumbers, it's just not for me.
Most vegetables for me, if it has ranch, I'm good.
Absolutely.
I'll eat them.
Yep. There's the key. I know. The parents would have us, if we had celery, put peanut butter on it.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was one of the things that we did when we were growing up. But that was just their way of getting me to at least try to eat celery.
Yeah.
It didn't last. I'll promise you that. That's our Facebook question today from Sweet Cream and Mankato. They're open 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. tonight. So check them out. By the way, if you ever answer our question on Facebook, you're automatically entered for a chance to win a gift certificate to Sweet Cream and there in Mankato. So it does pay to answer the question. We'll name the winner at the end of the week for that gift certificate from Sweet Cream and Mankato. All right. Sports Ticket here on Katy Country 94, again brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. We talked about, I'm just going to get the Stanley Cup out of the way since that's the latest Big Four championship that's been crowned. And again, it goes to the Florida Panthers, and a very interesting game there last night where it was a 1-1 tie after one period. And then the Panthers got a goal just ahead of the just past the 5-minute mark of the second quarter, second period, I guess you'd call it. There's only three periods, not four quarters in hockey. And they got that goal from Sam Reinhart, which ended up being the deciding goal with just under 5 minutes left in the second period. So they went it 2-1 and held on for the victory. There were a couple shots there in the third period. One for the actually it was just right before actually in the second period it was right before the Panthers scored. The Oilers were so close to putting one in to take a 2-1 lead, and then the Panthers got it back on the attack, and then they were able to go down and I think scored off a ricochet on the goal by I don't know these guys. Sam Reinhart. I got to look back at who I just said the name of because I'm not a hockey guy. I don't know all these things. So, again, the Panthers do win it. I'll get to your thoughts here in a second, but we're going to hear from the coach, Paul Maurice, on breaking through to win the title for the Panthers, their first ever in franchise history. After making it to the finals and losing a season ago, they go back this year and get the win. And here's Maurice on winning the cup.
I didn't know it then. And I didn't know when I got asked the question at the start of all this, and I said I need one, right? And I got to win a Stanley Cup. There's a whole bunch of things you don't know until you get there. You don't win a Stanley Cup. I didn't win the Stanley Cup tonight. I got to share it. And that is a completely different idea. Not that I thought this was all about me. I certainly didn't. I mean, you can replace me tomorrow. That's a good hockey team. But that's what I learned. You don't win a Stanley Cup. You share it. You get to share it.
Maurice also commented, he was talking about the comeback that the Oilers had to tie it up at 3 games apiece and then the way his team performed in Game 7 and how it all went.
I wanted tonight more than any other game to look a certain way. I wanted to stand behind the bench and watch the first period because we hadn't been very good in the first period. Under the most pressure, having lost 3 in a row, your dream slipping out the door. Wanted it to look a certain way, that the players play a certain way, that they had belief and courage. And the word that we used over the last 3 days was the freedom to play the game. And I don't mean I had the handcuffs on them. I mean, if it's on your stick and it's on you, you're playing the game. You're not banging it out, right? Except for the entire third period, which is extraordinary. We iced it 400 times, but that's what I wanted.
And that's what he got, right? Panthers play the game that he wanted, and they get the win, 4-3 the final in the series, 7-game series, 2-1 the final in Game 7. Well, you can tell that guy's Canadian just by listening to his voice, right? Paul Maurice, he's coached for the Hartford Whalers, Carolina Hurricanes, Toronto Maple Leafs, Winnipeg Jets, and now the Florida Panthers. He's had a lot of success and gets the Stanley Cup here. You know, he has been to a lot of playoffs, but never really been able to take it and get the win. As I mentioned, they made it to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, lost to the Golden Knights, did the Panthers, and they win it this year over the Oilers to give Stanley his first, or Stanley, Maurice his first Stanley Cup. Stanley won the Stanley. Maurice gets his first Stanley Cup, and so do the Florida Panthers.
I'll tell you what, listen to that guy. If you've ever seen the movie The Miracle on Ice about the Team USA being the Soviets.
Yeah, yep.
You know, the coach from that movie sounds exactly like him.
Yeah, he does. He's got a that Canadian accent floats down into Minnesota for sure.
Right? Oh yeah,
and into the U.S.
Sure. You know, congratulations to the Panthers. They fought hard for this. Of course, they dropped 3 games after going up 3-0 on the Oilers. And you know, I think honestly, I give the Oilers this. I was shocked they made it to the Stanley Cup because really they looked like a good team. They had star players, but I had heard so much from media and this guy's in my ears saying, you know, the Oilers, you have 2 guys, and the main one being Connor McDavid, who we're going to mention here later on, that they were the key pieces to this team. That was it. There was no other role players that were really helping them out, and, you know, they made it anyway. So, well, I know for the Oilers, this might seem like a defeat. I say it's more of a victory for them to start, and I very well believe they'll be back next year. As for Florida, they lost the Stanley Cup last year to Vegas, which obviously was not optimal, losing to an expansion team who won their first cup, I believe it was. And but like I said, just congratulations to them. They fought hard. I'm surprised they didn't drop Game 7, to be honest. I thought after dropping 3 straight games, there was no coming back.
Yeah, there's a history of a lot of these types of things happening, and there's not a history. There's more of a history in the NHL of coming back that we've documented over the last couple shows of coming back from 3-0 and winning. It's only happened once in the finals, which was in 1942, which was not – that's not the modern era. So yeah. It's never actually happened in the modern era, but you see it happen. And I just remember seeing it happen in the NBA a couple times where a team's down 3-0, they come back and tie it, and it's 3-3. And obviously, you know they didn't win it because it's never happened in the NBA where a team has come back from a 3-0 deficit and ended up winning. You know, there's some teams that will get that 3-0 win and or 3-0 lead and just bury it. You know, the Celtics this year were an example of that. They did lose to the Mavericks in Dallas in Game 4, but, you know, came back home and flat out buried it. Yeah. And so they never got the chance, Dallas, to even think that they had a chance to win the series. Yeah. And obviously the Oilers did in the NHL. Connor McDavid won a trophy in Game 7 against the Panthers, just not the one he wanted to win, being defeated by the Panthers 2-1 and not being able to finish off the thing. But McDavid was the winner of the Conn Smythe Trophy as the most valuable player of the 2024 postseason. That's another thing that I don't think people understand, that this Conn Smythe Trophy is not just for the Stanley Cup Finals. It is for the entire postseason. And there is no doubt that he is the guy that should win this. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of times where you look at, I'll give the example of, I got to look up the year here, but there's a lot of times where you're looking and you see who wins the NBA Finals MVP. Mm-hmm.
This year,
and it's like, it was Jaylen Brown this year. Could have been Jason Tatum, but it's a guy on the winning team most of the time. And Jerry West, I believe, is the only person that's ever not been on the winning team and won the NBA Finals MVP. So when you look at that and see it and understand that's an NBA Finals MVP award, not a NBA Playoffs Most Outstanding Player, Valuable Player. But I always go back to 2015 where Andre Iguodala won the MVP for the Warriors when they were playing the Cavaliers. And his numbers were fine. He did a good job defensively, so people say. And Steph Curry was like 5 or 6 points per game less than what his average was, still averaged like 25 points a game, but somehow that wasn't good enough. And so Iguodala wins the MVP when the MVP actually should have gone to neither one of those players. It should have gone to LeBron James on the losing team. And you just don't see it happen. You know, you got guys that have better series clearly and are clearly what the MVP stands for, is most valuable player. Mm-hmm. LeBron James was not on that team in 2015. They'd have had no chance against the Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, it was like LeBron got 4 of the 11 votes and Andre Iguodala got the other 7. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people understood that and respected it. But one of the things you do need to know about the Conn Smythe is it is a most valuable player of the postseason, not just the finals. McDavid is the 6th player in NHL history to win the Conn Smythe from a team that lost in the final. He's only the 2nd skater after Reggie Leach of the Philadelphia Flyers, who was named MVP in 1976. All of the other winners were goaltenders who lost in the final. John Sebastian Giguere of Anaheim in 2003 was the last to do it. Ron Hextall of Philadelphia in 1987, Glenn Hall of St. Louis in 1968, and Roger Crozier of Detroit in 1966. Gary Bettman announced McDavid as the Conn Smythe winner, with the trophy positioned atop the podium on the ice. There it stayed as Panthers fans booed the selection. McDavid had left for the Edmonton dressing room and did not reemerge to accept the award. Why would you? If it's my award, I'll get it later. I'm not out here to be in the middle of the celebration that the Panthers are having after my season ended with a loss. So, McDavid did briefly acknowledge the achievement. He said, yeah, obviously, I guess it's an honor with the names on that trophy, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's his comment. And that'd be my comment. I'm happy that I won the award. Great. I got a trophy. Great. That's not the Stanley Cup. I want the cup, and I want to celebrate with that. And I'm sure there are people that are complaining about it today that he didn't go accept the trophy, but get over it.
Yeah.
He lost. You'll be all right. He had 42 points, 4th most in a single postseason in NHL history, behind only Wayne Gretzky, who had 47 and 85, 43 and 88, and Mario Lemieux with 44 in 1991. And they both won the Conn Smythe in those seasons. Their teams also won the Stanley Cup in those seasons as well. So that's good company to be with the 4th most single postseason points in NHL history. Yeah. The guy deserved it. He earned it, and here we are.
Yep. I honestly think a lot of leagues should go to that format that NHL has. Basically, the MVP is not just for the finals, but it's also for the whole entire postseason. Because you look at baseball, for example, back in 2021, who won the MLB World Series MVP? That was Jorge Soler from the Royals, actually, who got traded to Atlanta that season. Mm-hmm. The only reason why he won is because he got hot that series. Now, did he deserve it? Yes, he did, because he helped the Braves win that series off of massive home runs in both Truist Park and Minute Maid. But, again, it's for one series. You win it because you got hot at the perfect time. It should be you win it because you're a good player and you completely deserve it because you got your team through the playoffs.
Yeah, and baseball's a little different because they actually award an ALCS MVP too and an NLCS MVP, so there's chances for other people to get those. Obviously, Salvador Perez won it when the Royals won in 2015, and then the next year, a former Royal also won it, Ben Zobrist, for the Cubs, when they won. I get what you're saying. It would be kind of cool. I think you could do both, honestly. Just have a World Series MVP, and then who's the most valuable player of the playoffs? You know, you could. Mm-hmm. I think you could do it both ways. I remember you talked about Soler getting traded. I remember when Carlos Beltran was traded from the Royals in 2004, and he had just a unreal postseason, helped lead the Astros to the World Series. They got beat by the Cubs. That was actually 2005, I think, now that I'm saying it out loud. But and that's a guy there that, despite his team losing, would also probably be in a lot of the talks, just like McDavid was last night, of
exactly,
even though his team lost, it was 2004. I thought that was right, but so, yeah, this is talking about this in 2016, which was 12 years later this story is from, and it's like it was an offseason or a postseason that was just still one to remember. Unforgettable October there for Carlos Beltran, and again, his team ended up losing in the World Series, but obviously he had an outstanding postseason there, and that'd be a perfect example of a guy that had a great entire postseason. I'm trying to look up what exactly happened in the end of that. They beat the Braves in the NLDS. And I got to look at their whole schedule here and get the postseason pulled up. They actually didn't make the World Series. They lost to the Cardinals in the NLCS. As I was talking about it, I don't think that was the year that Houston made a World Series. They actually lost to the Cardinals in 7 games. But still, Carlos Beltran had the numbers and the stats that could have done that. And then in 2004, obviously, we know that the other side of the playoffs was what we were talking about earlier, with a 3-0 deficit, where the Red Sox came back to beat the Yankees from 3-0 down and won the series in 7, and then went on to sweep the Cardinals in the World Series. So that all happened in 2004. So I don't know if Carlos Beltran would have won the MVP of the postseason, now that I think about that, with everything that the Red Sox were able to accomplish, and maybe it'd be a David Ortiz. I don't even remember who won the World Series MVP in 2004, but I get what you're talking about, and I agree with it. There is kind of a difference in baseball where they award that in the championship series and the World Series as far as the MVP is concerned. So, MVP was actually Manny Ramirez in 2004 World Series. So I don't know what he did throughout the entire postseason, but obviously he had a good World Series where the Red Sox swept the Cardinals and, man, had all the momentum going and said, yep, goodbye St. Louis. And I was not disappointed with that the Red Sox beat the Yankees and then the Cardinals. Fun times.
Oh, yeah. That's always a good year.
Yeah. So, unfortunately for the Edmonton Oilers, it didn't happen for them. They were down 3-0, came back to tie at 3-3, but they lose in Game 7 there last night. You can read much more about what happened in the NHL postseason and the Stanley Cup Finals at NHL.com. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll go over the Royals and a new College World Series champion crowned here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands, extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of 4. Call or stop by Kiever Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieverBrothers.com.
Right midfield, the Heat will help. And that is gone. Number 8 for Vinny.
Get out of the ballpark, and there goes.
And now Salvi. Deep left center field, and that is gone. Back to back. And the Royals take the lead in the fourth inning.
It felt good to finally score some runs again after having two straight games where the Royals didn't score, and then it ended up being 25 straight innings without a run scored. And Vinny Pascantino, Salvador Perez changed that with two back-to-back home runs. The Royals would get another run in that inning to go up 3-1, and they go on to win 4-1 over the Marlins there on Tuesday or Monday night, actually, in Kansas City. It was a RBI single from Kyle Isbell that scored Michael Massey to put the Royals up 3-1. And then Hunter Renfroe got a home run in the sixth inning to make it 4-1. It's been a rough go of it for the Royals, and they had a struggle in Texas over the weekend. Obviously, we documented that, outscored 16-2 in the three games and scoreless in the last two on Saturday and Sunday. Bobby Witt Jr. struggled, and he finally got back going with a base hit, his 100th hit of the season, which leads the majors. Mm-hmm. Last night, and he got there fast, obviously, and his average is now 312. It's dipped a little bit after not getting a single hit in the series in Texas. So he goes 1-for-3, had a walk, and listen, these guys need to be producing for the Royals to have success, and that's what happened last night. C.J. Alexander made his Major League debut last night, getting called up and started at third base. He went 0-for-3 and struck out his first at-bat. Oh, boy, you could tell it was his first at-bat in the majors. He had three pitches, and he sat down. It was over. He's like, I got my cousin sent me a snap. He's like, he went to the MJ Melendez School of Swinging, apparently. Yeah, it was rough. Yikes. MJ, by the way, is batting 179, another 0-for-2 night. Did have two walks last night. Alexander was called up. Nelson Velasquez was optioned back down to AAA Omaha. Just hasn't been his year. Man, he came in hot last year when he was traded to Kansas City and just was blasting the ball out of the park, and that's not been the case this year for Nelson Velasquez, so he's been sent down. There's a lot of people that say, okay, next is MJ Melendez. I like the way people just say, hey, send these guys down. Who's playing left field when MJ Melendez goes to Omaha?
That's
people,
the problem.
The people don't focus on the part of it that, hey, maybe there's not a dude ready to come up and play left field. And it's not always about how a guy's swinging the bat.
Oh, no,
you have an opportunity here with Velasquez, who's just basically a DH type anyway. And so you'll find a spot for whoever you bring up for him and send him back down. Again, C.J. Alexander is the example of that. He gets a start at third base last night, and he gets to make his major league debut there. And it's always fun to see that. But listen, I don't know. I've not looked at what Omaha is doing this year. I don't know if there is a left fielder that's even close to being ready to take that spot for MJ Melendez. But I would venture to guess that if there was, he'd probably be up here by now.
I'd say Drew Water would be the closest thing.
And he's not a left fielder.
He's a center fielder.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you could, in theory, move him over, but is this something you really
want to
do?
No, you're not going to, though.
No,
I mean,
no,
you know, outfield spots are pretty well set, unless you're like Ben Zobrist and you're a guy that is a dude that moves around, right? Like, if you are a guy that is typically moved around and you can do that, you're a utility player, you can do it. But
great.
Yeah, Drew Waters is definitely a center fielder. Right. And so they're not going to put him out at left without experience, because left field is actually the toughest place to play out in the outfield. And I'm surprised that MJ Melendez has had the success that he's had actually in the field, because he's doing a great job after he himself was a guy that was kind of jerked around and put in a lot of different positions, and they finally decided on left field for him, which I didn't like any of that. I was one of them that did not want MJ Melendez playing in the outfield, but then they got Freddie Fermin as a backup catcher and can spell Salvador Perez if he's not catching. And so now they had an opening there they felt comfortable and confident that they had the backup catcher, and now they can do whatever they want with MJ Melendez. I didn't like it. I hated it 2 years ago when they kept putting him in different positions, and it's like, this is not where a guy should learn. Let him learn in Omaha, not in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And I still to this day will say that all of that has affected him at the plate, and it still continues to affect him at the plate. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that continues. Mm-hmm. He's not hitting well, but Nelson Velasquez wasn't hitting well. And again, he's a DH, so it's easier to send him down you can. There's a lot of different guys on this team that you could spot in as a DH, no matter what. So
I think with
it's a whole different thing there.
Melendez too. He you can't also set him down just based off of hitting stats, because he's also actually been a really good fielder for the Royals. Maybe no Alex Gordon, but you know, he's still been a solid fielder, and even if you're not hitting well, that's all you can ask for of a player, to at least do something. And he's out there doing his job, and you know, he's trying. It's not as if he's not. So
yeah, Mike Moustakas was this way early in his career. There was a time where he just wasn't hitting the ball, and everybody's like, send him down to Omaha. Well, they did for a day, and then somebody got injured, and then he had to bring him right back up. And that's when he had kind of the turnaround and got things going. And became who everybody knows as Mike Moustakas and what he was for the Royals during their World Series runs. And so, you can't just say, hey,
send him down.
You got to have somebody that's going to take that spot for him when you send him down and bring somebody else up. So,
see, that's why fans shouldn't be allowed to run professional baseball teams, because if they did, Melendez would be sent down already, and we would have a ghost out in left field.
Yeah.
Casper the Ghost, the left fielder from Missouri State University. I don't know.
That's where we'd be. It's not as easy as just saying, hey, this guy can't hit, send him to Omaha. Cole Reagans had six innings pitched last night. He struck out 11. He allowed one run on four hits and three walks. Got back on the winning track, 5-5 on the season. Now he did throw 108 pitches in those six innings, so the pitch count got a bit up. But again, the Royals snapping a 25-inning scoreless streak, and their acting manager, Paul Hoover, who's in for Matt Quatrero, who is out again for personal reasons. Hoover gave his thoughts on fighting through those struggles with this team.
I can't speak for them, but what it looks like is when you're struggling, everybody tries to do a little bit more, right? And it's a tough game, and when we're trying to do more than what we can, it becomes real difficult. So maybe a little bit of pressing, because everybody wants to win and get off the snide. Maybe a little bit of pressing, but they could probably answer that better than me.
Yeah, Paul Hoover, the acting manager. I don't even know if there's been anything about why Matt Quatrero is not there.
But I think it just said personal
matters is all that I've ever seen. There's no story about it. There's nothing really on Twitter that I've seen. But Matt Quatrero has been out with dealing with a personal matter. So it's nobody's business but Matt Quatrero's, if he doesn't want it to be anybody else's business. So, Matt Quatrero available in the dugout at 5 o'clock today. So apparently he's going to be back today.
That's good.
I don't know. That's just kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know. Something good about baseball is something I've always liked about it is when you start these skids where you're dropping like 10 out of 20 games. You know, it's a long season. You got 162 games to rebound. It's not the end of the season for the Royals in any way. And if this was happening in football, it'd be over. I mean, that'd be it. Our season's done. But it's not. It's baseball. It's a really long season. It goes all summer. And so the Royals, now they're in a skid. They're half a game off from the Red Sox for that third wild card position. But you know, again, it's a long season. We don't know what's going to happen, and the All-Star break is coming up here soon. Now I'll give it a chance for everyone to kind of just sit down, regroup, let them figure out what they want to do, and hopefully we can come out of the All-Star break firing.
And they're still playing games right now that they need to win, though. And when you're playing a team that's 27-51, these are the games you gotta get if you want to make the playoffs. And they did that for the most part early in the season. Then they hit that middle of the year stretch and that early June to mid-June stretch that I had been warning people about for a long time that it was going to get tough. And then they kind of let that spill over with the A's and Rangers, and it didn't go. They lost 3 out of 14, or they lost 3 out of 14, lost 11 out of 14 during the stretch. So they're back on the winning track. As you said, they are still now with their struggles here, 3-7 in their last 10. They're still a half a game behind the Red Sox, like you just said. The Orioles, Twins, and Red Sox would be the three wild cards as of now. And then in the National League, it'd be the Braves, Cardinals, and Padres. But the Marlins are they're tied for the worst record in the National League at 27-51 with the Rockies. So this is a series. You say you have to. I agree with that. The Royals won't say you have to. A lot of people won't say you have to win these games, but it just feels like you do. If you're wanting to be a serious team here and continue to go on the right path. You don't want to be losing to teams like this that are well below 500, and you have a chance to better your situation after you've struggled a bit here. So, yeah, they have the Marlins because the Guardians are coming in for four games right after the Marlins.
Oh,
and Cleveland's been outstanding this year. People just unexpected how good they've been. So, yeah, the Royals and Marlins will play game two tonight of the three-game series at Kauffman Stadium. So that'll be a 7:10 first pitch from the K as Seth Lugo is back on the mound, 10-2 with a 2.42 ERA. Lugo's been a lot better over his last couple games. He had two games there in a stretch where he struggled a bit, giving up 9 earned runs. But he's given up just 2 earned runs in his last 2 starts against the Dodgers on June 15th and against the A's on June 20th, which were 2 of the 3 wins that they've had in this stretch. They beat the Dodgers 7-2 and the A's 3-2, and that come-from-behind win there to salvage a game there against the A's. So Seth Lugo is on the mound and has had success all year and kind of righted the ship the last 2 starts, 10-2, 2.42 ERA against Yonny Chirinos of the Marlins, who's 0-0 with a 3.60 ERA. Looks like he's only started one game this year, has just 5 innings pitched so far. So a young guy, not a young guy, but a guy that does probably did not get a lot of opportunities. He's 30 years old, but he is making the start tonight for the Marlins. First pitch, 7:10, Royals and Marlins tonight.
Hey, I'll tell you this much. I know a lot of fans are probably panicking a little bit about the skid, but I'm happy as long as we don't start dropping series to the White Sox. Who probably, honestly, would probably lose to Tennessee.
They're bad. Did you see the other night they lost a game on a double play? I'm pretty sure it was the game. It was definitely the inning, but I'm pretty sure it was the game. On a double play, on a line or a fly ball into the outfield with one out. Guy makes the catch, and dude on the bases does not realize that it's not the third out. And he's running around the bases just in case there's a drop and does not have time to get back.
That is,
might have just been an inning double play, but either way, it was gross. Yeah. Like that's the way the White Sox have been.
That's
21-59.
That is 2024 White Sox for you.
Yeah. So, yeah.
When I say they could probably lose to Tennessee, I mean it.
I 1,000,000,000% disagree with that, but I know what you're trying to say, but there's never been in my lifetime a team that I think a college team could beat a pro team in anything.
I don't know.
Just not some of the teams that they're talking, like Alabama could beat the worst NFL football team. No, they couldn't. The talent is too good at the NFL level to lose to 18 to 21 year old college kids that are playing a whole different game than you, and defenses are going to be more physical with you. With Alabama, they're not going to be able to do what they always. There's not a. I can't think of a team. They talked about this a lot back in the early 2000s with the Miami team, because they did. Miami had a ton of guys go to the NFL, and there was actually a commercial on ESPN. Could Miami beat the Bengals? Because the Bengals were terrible back then. And in my mind, I'm like, no, absolutely not. It's an NFL team for a reason. Every one of these 53 guys is part of the best group of football players in the world. You can't say that about the 75 kids on a college football roster.
That is true.
Or you can't say it about the however many kids are on a baseball roster compared to the 25 that are playing for the White Sox. These guys are still professionals and they're still Major League Baseball players. And yeah, you'll see a lot of these college guys. The reason I say what I say, especially about baseball, is because there's so many different levels to this. You get to single A, double A, triple A. Triple A team could probably beat the White Sox. There's probably a really good triple A team that could definitely beat the White Sox.
Omaha.
Maybe it is Omaha. I don't know who it is, but there's probably a good triple A team that could beat the White Sox. But college teams, there's, man, even at the high level of college, when you're watching some of these games, there are errors made that you're like,
seriously?
This is the best team in the nation, and they just made that play. Like, there's times where you're watching. Like, Arkansas, I think it was 2018, should have beaten Oregon State. They dropped a pop-up down the first base line.
Oh, yeah.
It ended up haunting them, and Oregon State won the dang World Series. I mean, that's just an example of the highest level of teams buckling under the pressure.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying. I know why you said it. But as far as an actual conversation about it, I don't think
probably not.
Any college team at any level that could beat. Now, I'm not saying that maybe in the WNBA there's not like a team that could beat the worst WNBA team. Like, South Carolina, maybe they could. I don't know. Maybe they could beat the worst WNBA team. But I still would have to do some pretty serious analysis of that and be like, I don't know if that can happen.
Hey, in the NFL, back in the 40s, college and NFL players used to play each other all the time.
Yeah.
They'd have a bowl at the end of each season, and it'd be the, I think, the college champion versus the NFL champion, actually. I believe it was. So
yeah.
Let's just say we don't do it anymore for a reason.
Yeah. Well, and that would be, even if you did that, how serious would the NFL champion take that game if you did it now, right?
Not
it'd be like an exhibition, and they'd be like, why are we doing this? I'm not risking my life or my career for this.
We're not risking it. Like, if players don't want to play in the Pro Bowl, they're not going to play in that.
Yeah. Speaking of Tennessee baseball, they played Texas A&M last night.
That ball is lifted deep to right. LaViolette is at the track. Check that. It's not LaViolette. It's Sorrell. And it is gone. A huge two-run home run. And that is a big, big shot for clutch man Dylan Dreiling. Swing and a miss. And for the first time, Rocky Top reaches the mountaintop of college baseball.
Rocky Top reaches the. I like the way he closed that out. Rocky Top reaches the mountaintop.
Oh, that was good.
Good old Rocky Top. Rocky Top, Tennessee. No, we went to my cousin's bachelor party in Nashville. We'll get back to Tennessee winning the College World Series here in just a second. But we went to the bachelor party in Nashville. This was in mid March when the SEC tournament was going on. Yeah. So. Parker had the idea of everybody wear a different team's shirt. We're going to go to the SEC tournament. We went on Thursday, and it's like noon session, middle of the day session, and said, everybody wear a different team's shirt. Like, let's show up to this thing in different shirts of different schools. And P right away said, I'm Tennessee. I think he just likes the Tennessee orange color, right? That's probably where it started.
Oh, yeah, probably.
But he went in all the way. He's Rocky Top to his core now. And it was very, very fun because we went, and you can see the picture on my Facebook. It was my profile picture for a bit, and it's got – so I picked Vandy because my favorite comedian is Nate Bargatze, and he's a Vanderbilt fan. So yeah. I was like, I told Parker, I said, anybody got Vandy? He's like, absolutely not. Why would you want Vandy? I'm like, hey, I got a reason. I'm supporting my boy Nate Bargatze. So I picked Vandy. I had a Vandy quarter zip that I wore, and we had – Ole Miss, we had Alabama was represented, Mississippi State, Auburn,
Arkansas,
Florida, South Carolina, I'm trying to think, Tennessee, I think somebody may have, I can't remember if anybody was Arkansas or not. LSU was represented. Let's just stop trying to count it and just pull up my Facebook. How about we just do that?
Just look at it, yeah.
Anyway, so we're all wearing these. One guy actually ducked out, so I don't think Arkansas actually was represented on it. We did have one person that didn't end up wearing the shirt of the school, but it was a good time. And so we had all these shirts on. This I do have a point to this, by the way. We're gonna go somewhere with the Rocky Top part. People are probably like, who cares about all this? So, we had Vanderbilt, Tennessee, South Carolina, Ole Miss, LSU, Florida, Alabama, and Auburn. Those were the eight teams that were represented. And there was one person I know that was trying to decide between whatever they picked and Arkansas. And they went with something different. There's a reason that many people wanted South Carolina just to have a certain word on their shirt. Because we're all childish like we were back in high school. And when they came out with the hats for South Carolina, I can't even tell you how many people in the late 90s, early 2000s had those top of the world hats that had the or the game day hats that had the certain word. I'm not even going to say it. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Rocky Top. So Tennessee is Parker's team. And so we all show up at the SEC tournament. We take a picture of this stupid "It Just Means More" SEC sign that's outside there. Which, by the way, SEC teams have won 5 straight national championships in baseball now. So maybe it does mean more in baseball. They get a little help by getting teams in that shouldn't be in the tournament. I know Florida made the College World Series, but they still shouldn't have been in the tournament. So anyway, we're on Rocky Top. So after this is all done, we're wearing these shirts all over Broadway down in Nashville the whole day. Mm-hmm. So we went to Old Red, which is Blake Shelton's bar there that night. And the guy's taking a request that's up there singing, right? Mm-hmm. And P's like, play Rocky Top. And so he like tipped him on Venmo and said, play Rocky Top, which is how you do it. That's how you mm-hmm. get your requests and how you get them played. And he was just like waiting. He never played Rocky Top. So Parker gets his phone out. We're real close to the stage, and he just types play Rocky Top and just puts it up here, like, play Rocky Top. He's got it on his forehead. And anyway, so the guy's like shaking his head. He's like, fine. And then he looks over at us. He's like, why are y'all here wearing all those shirts? This guy over here is wearing an Alabama shirt, and that guy's got an Auburn shirt on. Get out of here. The guy's from Georgia, but he was an Alabama fan. And so he's like, get out of here, man. What are you guys shouldn't even be next to each other. What's going on? And then so he plays Rocky Top. We go crazy. Everybody goes crazy. And so now we're on a Rocky Top fever right now. I'm in a Vanderbilt shirt singing Rocky Top. Something doesn't add up here. And so anyway, we had Rocky Top, and then so we get the gift last night right after Tennessee wins, Rocky Top from Parker and the group, and I actually have a video of the bus at his wedding where they played Rocky Top, and it was a good time, and so shared that and had a good time with the Rocky Top part of it. That's a personal story. We had a lot of fun with Rocky Top, and so we've kind of adopted Rocky Top, and it's been fun. And it's, you know why it's real fun to adopt Rocky Top right now? Because the College World Series MVP is from Hayes, Kansas.
Wow.
And the college, the whole series, this is not just the championship series like we were talking about earlier. It is the entire college. It's not the entire college tournament, but it is the College World Series MVP, Dylan Dreiling from Hayes, Kansas. You heard the home run that he had, and he helped put them up 5-1. It was 3-1. Tennessee had the lead going into the seventh inning. And Dreiling bashed the two-run homer, much like he did on Sunday. He had a two-run homer on Sunday as well, and had a home run in every single game of this College World Series championship series, the championship finals. And he hit the two-run homer to give Tennessee a 5-1 lead. It's actually very, very important. Tennessee added another run to make it 6-1 after seven. It's the national championship series. Texas A&M's never been there. You know they're not going to go away. They scored two in the seventh, two more in the eighth, or two in the eighth, actually, two in the ninth, and then the door was shut, finally, in the end with the strikeout that you heard earlier. Yep. Tennessee getting their first ever national championship. Dylan Dreiling, again, was the MVP, most outstanding player, actually, is what they call it in the College World Series, and he gave his thoughts about performing on that big stage.
I just treated it like just any other game. This is a real special group. We did a good job of that all year. We played in a lot of big games, and this team just treated it like any other game. This group, it's just special. The bond we have is unbreakable. It was a vocal point in the fall, and we did a very good job of that, and we're all just brothers.
Dylan Dreiling from Hayes, Kansas, the MOP of the College World Series. What a tournament that he, or World Series that he had. He finished with the three homers that I mentioned. He had 13 hits and 11 RBI in the College World Series. That's the whole tournament. And obviously, you know, they won three games to get to the championship series. So that comes over six games that they did that. So Dylan Dreiling stepping up big time and helping Tennessee to a 60-13 record. That was their 60th win last night.
So you're telling me he was the mop of the tournament?
He was the mop.
Helped to clean up Texas A&M?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, Dylan Dreiling, they said he committed to Tennessee after his freshman year of high school at Hayes High. And obviously, you never know how that's going to go, obviously, if you're committing that early. But you have a confidence and obviously a respect for the coach that recruited you to go ahead and commit that early to a D1 school in the SEC and leave home and go far away from home like that. Oh, yeah. And it paid off for Dylan Dreiling. There's no question about that. Dreiling, by the way, is if you're watching in Western Kansas and you saw that name, you're like, well, that dude's from Western Kansas. I don't know where, but he's from somewhere in Ellis County, probably.
Probably, yeah.
And, Dreiling is the – there's some Drylings that have gone around to different places, but most of them have based out of Ellis County, the ones that you probably know in this state. So, Dylan Dreiling, the MOP, Tennessee, the national champions here in 2024 in college baseball. That's their first national championship in program history.
Yeah, Dusty, I got an idea. To celebrate Tennessee winning it, and I'm not a Tennessee fan, but I do love myself Rocky Top. After the sports tickets are over with, first song we play should be Rocky Top.
I was going to try to find it, but I don't know if we have it in our system. It's funny you say that because I actually was going to play Rocket Top closing out the show, but I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
I gotta find it before I can do that. So, yeah, it was. You weren't the first person to have the idea. I can promise you that. Then you gotta find the right one, right?
Yeah. Well, see, do we want the?
Yeah,
you that want band the, playing it. Do we want the actual version?
You want that? I've got it.
There goes.
We'll get it. the reason I'm doing this is because I know that my cousin listens to this show, whether he's listening to it live or whether he's listening to it on the podcast. He listens, so yeah, we'll ride out. But before we do that, I wanted to make sure there's nothing else that's come up in the sporting world this morning. It always seems like there's something that
happens.
Didn't see this yet, but I see it now today. The Phillies turned a rare 1-3-5 triple play, the first since 1929. That's interesting. Triple play snuffed out a Detroit Tigers rally in the third inning Monday night. They were down 4-0. Tigers had a chance to get something going. Zach McKinstry and Carson Kelly hit back-to-back singles, putting runners on the corners. Matt Vierling hit a broken bat liner to Aaron Nola, who tossed to Bryce Harper to double Kelly off first. And then catcher Garrett Stubbs, noticing McKinstry had never stopped running from third, signaled to Harper to throw to third, where Alec Bohm stepped on the bag to finish the triple play. That's weird to me that you can have a force out after you've gotten the first two out already. But I guess runners on the corners, like he would have had to tag. He couldn't have stepped. If there's runners on the corners, he had to have tagged the guy, not stepped on the bag. Am I wrong?
A 1-3-5 triple play.
I gotta
so say that again. The sequence.
I gotta watch
of,
this video because it says that they doubled off on the hit, and the guy was running and didn't stop running past third.
That's from the pitcher. The pitcher caught it.
Yeah,
the first baseman, then the third baseman.
Yeah, I gotta watch I gotta watch this video because the description of that doesn't make any sense to me. Like I feel like you'd have to tag that guy at third. Let's watch it. Let's see what happens here. The guy. Okay, here's your. Oh, it was a line drive. That's why. See that? I thought it was just a ground ball. So yeah, it's a line drive. So now you throw it to first, and you can just step on the bag,
yeah,
and it's out.
Yeah,
I wasn't paying attention.
That makes more sense.
What does it say? It says, broken bat liner. Oh. I didn't read and comprehend as I was reading. Mm-hmm. Comprehension is key when you're reading. just so you know, if you didn't. Broken bat liner. Yeah. So then it's tossed to Bryce Harper to double off Kelly, and then they know, hey, dude, this dude didn't stop running, and he is now home and headed to the dugout, but he is now out.
Yep.
That might be worse than what I was talking about with the White Sox earlier. How are you running on a broken bat liner to the pitch? That's just bad base running.
In his fence, though, I'll give him this. How would you know if that would have been caught? I mean, he's focused on getting home. So in his defense, and yes, he probably should have looked afterwards, but again, in his defense, he was worried about scoring.
He might have been, but
I don't know.
Ball's in the air. You got to make sure if it's caught or if it's on the ground. Like, if it comes off the bat, you got to know. And
honestly,
also, the third base coach got to know, too.
Yeah. True. And honestly, though, maybe he should have stopped because of the possibility of infield fly rule. I mean, why?
Well, it wouldn't be an infield fly because it's a line drive. So.
True. But still, it's like, why? That is the point, though. Why are you running when it could have been caught?
Yeah, you shouldn't be running on a liner, no matter what. If it's a broken bat, you think it's going to hit the ground. It clearly didn't. It went right to the pitcher.
Yeah.
That's a base running blunder by the base runner, and also the third base coach probably should have been like, no, dude, what are you doing? Again, you can't stop him if he's
who was that again? That
full head of momentum, the Tigers.
Oh. Yeah. I don't get that with the AL Central. Their records show that they're good, but like, I swear, the teams in the AL Central make the dumbest mistakes ever. I don't know why.
I just got a Snapchat from P. Champions today and forever.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, I do want to pass along one local thing before we close out the show today, and I'll reiterate this over the next couple days. Brady Pollen of Beloit, who's had a lot of success doing track and field with Wichita State St. John's grad of 2020, All-American in track and field in the high jump indoor and outdoor this season, finished eighth in the country in the national championships, the high jump. He'll be competing at the Olympic trials, which are coming up Thursday. He'll jump at 7 o'clock in Eugene, Oregon. NBC usually airs the entire meet, mostly focusing on running events, though. So the USA Network app is what's supposed to be airing the live individual events. So find the USA Network app. There'll be 24 jumpers split between two mats. They compete until the top 12 athletes remain. Those 12 will compete in the finals on Sunday to place individually. And then the only jumpers who have met the Olympic standard will make the Paris trip the height of 7'7 3/4. I love Brady. He's not really been close to that in his career of 7'7 3/4, but it is an unreal achievement in its own right for somebody from Beloit, Kansas and St. John's High School to be competing at the Olympic trials, to just even have the mark to get there, to be able to do that and to put your name in. And that's obviously something that he'll remember for the rest of his life and his family will remember for the rest of his life.
Who knows? Maybe he'll PR there. Who knows?
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Weirder things have happened.
That'd be the most outstanding PR of anybody's life in this area. I think we're all being realistic when we see that number that it's like, ooh, I don't know. It might be out of reach, but I can tell you, I'll tell you one thing about Brady. He's not going to back down. He's going to go out and he's going to perform to his best of his ability. And if he PRs and hits 7.4 or 7.5 or something like that, that would still be great, no matter what he would do. If again, it's an outstanding honor and outstanding for him to just even be there. So, again, we'll talk about that more if you missed it. We'll have it on our sports tomorrow as well. And just to get everybody alerted that Brady Pullen is competing at the U.S. Olympic Trials. There are three Kansas athletes competing. Loudermilk from KU and Tyus Wilson from Sterling, who's at Nebraska. I think those are the three, I would imagine, because those were the three that finished as All-Americans in the country earlier. Earlier this month. So, a lot of success for Kansas kids in the high jump.
Hey, we like seeing it, don't we?
All right, that'll wrap it up for the sports ticket today. Hey, DJ, play Rocky Top.
Good old Rocky Top.
Wish that I was on old Rocky Top down in the Tennessee hills. Ain't no smoggy smoke on Rocky Top, ain't no telephone bills. Once I had a girl on Rocky Top, half bear, the other half cat. Still dream about that. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee. Rocky Top, Tennessee. Once two strangers climbed old Rocky Top looking for a moonshine still. Strangers ain't come down from Rocky Top, reckon they never will. Corn won't grow at all on Rocky Top, dirt's too rocky by far. That's why all the folks on Rocky Top get their corn from a jar. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee. Rocky Top, Tennessee.
All right, that's enough, Rocky Top. Have a great day, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.